Hello, and welcome to the first episode of Beginner's Basics to Dungeons & Dragons. My name is Evan Kaufman, and I'll be your Dungeon Master for this session. In this show, we're focused on that cultural zeitgeist, that tabletop game of tabletop games, that collection of books and loosely organized papers that I'm still trying to figure out how to summon Satan from, that dragon, Dungeons & Dragons. If you don't already know, D&D is a game where two or more people sit down, roll dice, and tell a story with each other, where the players create and roleplay as their own personal characters, and the Dungeon Master, or DM for short, who is one part narrator, one part referee, responds in kind, roleplaying as every cunning villain, every gruff shopkeeper, and every snarling monster to be fought on the road to glory, describing the world and various scenarios that the players need to solve in some way. Needless to say, it's a great system which distributes the necessary workload of just making D&D happen perfectly. Now, this being my first episode, I have to set some ground rules for this podcast right out of the gate. This show is going to be one part a guide for people looking to get into D&D, and one part persuasion of why you should give the game a go. A wise man once told me that all veteran D&D players should try to create new D&D players. Because honestly, the game does get a pretty bad rap in pop culture. You think about almost any movie or TV show you've seen where the game is depicted or parodied, and the image probably isn't a flattering one.
Yeah, actually, if you just roll onto their armor class, the roll goes to the defender. You don't actually hit.
For pop culture, I think Stranger Things is the only TV show I've seen to accurately depict what D&D is like in the moment-to-moment. Mike, Will, Dustin, and Lucas sit in Mike's basement, sipping Coke, defeating Demogorgons, and cheering when they finally overcome their challenges. That matches many of the experiences I've had over the years as well. For some background, I've been playing D&D since about 2015, but never really viewed it as a serious hobby until I came to college, where I bonded with many of my now very close friends over silly 3 to 4 hour blocks of complicated math-oriented play pretend. I've been running my own games for a little over a year now, and having had a blast, have come to realize that I enjoy DMing sometimes more than actually playing. Still being somewhat new to running games myself, I think, uniquely equips me to talk to newcomers to the hobby. Many more experienced dungeon masters have sought to explain how people should get into the game, as well as their methods as a DM on YouTube. However, they can sometimes skim over many of the beginner's basics that I've just had to figure out myself. Even Matthew Mercer, the prodigal Jesus Christ of DMing, is guilty of this at points, flaunting off his expensive, studio-covered D&D setup. His nice, hardwood DM screen, an army of minis, all the books. His laminated location and encounter notes and... it's whatever. I'm a less than wealthy college student, and the point is, you don't need any of that crap. You don't need any of that crap, Matthew! The point is, today I begin to impart a bit of what I've learned about D&D in the past year of focusing on it as a hobby, beginning with what I believe to be the most obvious aspect of the D&D experience: total creative freedom. Let's roll. Dungeons & Dragons as a game is notoriously Lord of the Rings inspired. The formative years of the game's life featured hobbits as a playable race before Tolkien Enterprises sent TSR, the company that made the first edition of D&D, a cease and desist, and the word hobbit got changed out for halfling. That being said, many people first trying out the game seek to recreate those familiar fantasy elements and bring those familiar characters to their own tables. A wise old wizard, a haughty elvish archer, or a gruff lone wolf human. Generally baby's first D&D characters. Not that there's anything wrong with doing a Legolas impression, for the love of God. I'm just trying to get the point across that you just need to let yourself run wild when you're getting into the game. Assume nothing is impossible to create going into it. Fifth edition, the most current version of the game, lets you mix and match a wealth of various fantasy races with classes and background. In the way Coldstone Creamery lets you make your preferred frozen sugar, so too does 5e let you make your own character, exactly the way you like. For example, in addition to the aforementioned halflings, there are humans, dwarves, elves, mermaids, goblins, and more. Pick a race, you get some number bonuses, which increase your strength, intelligence, charisma, toughness, etc., and some race features, like elves not being able to be put to sleep by magical means, or goblins being able to hit even harder when they attack by virtue of being small and punching up. Next is your class, which defines what your character's current occupation is and what special powers you have. Among others, there are wizards who can cast spells and fold the fabric of reality onto itself. Holy clerics and paladins who assist their friends and rain the literal wrath of God on their enemies. And nature-oriented rangers who are expert survivalists and trackers, to name a few. Finally, there are backgrounds, which inform what your character did before you became a wanderer and an adventurer. Did you live a life of luxury and plenty as the child of an influential noble? Did you grow up rough on the streets of a major city, learning to sneak around and steal just to survive? Maybe you're just a normal dude or dudette who just decided they wanted to go out on some grand adventure. Once you start playing around with these various concepts, you'll find that you can live out basically any idea you have, which is part of what makes this game so great. Also, if you're building your first character, I challenge you to not play as a human. Going back to the ice cream metaphor, being a human in D&D is a lot like ordering a single scoop of vanilla ice cream in a chocolate-dipped, sprinkle-covered waffle cone. That sounds delicious, but you still have all these magical powers and superhuman abilities on standby, depending on what you choose as a class, but at the core of it is still just that neutral, kind of expected ice cream flavor. And that's okay, some people like vanilla. I like vanilla. I think humans have the opportunity to be some of the most interesting characters you could play in D&D. But what I'm saying is that to kind of find your creative foothold, really challenge yourself to try something different right out of the gate. If you're listening to this, I'm going to go out on a limb and presume that you have the internet, so take some time and look up all the available D&D races and read a little bit about them, if you really have to spark your imagination. I'll also advise you not to think so much about what makes your character different from the aforementioned examples of Gandalf and Legolas, but think about what they might have in common with those characters and sort of lean into that. Now, I know that that must sound contradictory to everything that I just said, but hear me out. For example, wizards are by nature very focused on magic and studying the mystical arts. If you were building, say, a reserved, orphaned, elvish wizard, what is it that motivates them to study and make magic the focal point of their centuries-long life? They could be learning magic so that they can avenge their dead parents, smiting their enemies with a level 9 fireball to the face. Or they could be practicing magic in honor of one of their parents, who happened to be a great wizard before them. Perhaps after a lifetime of being beaten down and screwed over as an orphan, magic feels to them like an empowering tool which bends reality to their will, and they're determined to have as much of that power as possible. Maybe it's not so malicious. They could want that power to make sure that other people don't have so terrible a life as they did. And heck, maybe they're only interested in magic because the orphanage they lived in used to have magicians who would entertain the kids once a month, and they always really admired their works. Now for me, when I make characters, I think first about what kind of energy I want to bring through their personality, and then build a character around that idea of what makes them a wizard, what makes them a fighter, a rogue, a paladin, or what have you. And I think many of my most interesting characters have come out of this thought process. My favorite examples being Garvey Moonstone, a pirate wizard and necromancer who, after spending a lifetime trying to make himself immortal in legend as an infamous pirate, discovered magic and how necromancy can literally make you immortal. Now he travels to build himself a literal skeleton crew and become a lich.
There's also Bagra Skull Crusher, an orc dedicated to human gods, who left her tribe after her daughter died and now seeks revenge against those who wronged her family.
My next character, who I'll be taking for a run in a few weeks, is Keegan Lightwind, a blind human cleric who spent his formative years under the watch of a tribe of forest guardians, who took him in when his parents abandoned him, and now travels with just the winds and the gods of nature he grew up in the shelter of as his guiding force in life. Just have an idea, understand the fundamentals of who you're making, and then play around with that concept a little bit. Eventually, you'll get something special. These same tricks apply for dungeon masters as well. As a DM, your primary responsibility is to make sure that everyone is having fun. And this simple, vague goal opens the door to a wealth of various creative ways to play around with your friends, family, or whoever it is that you have sitting at your table. I'll cover the more DMing-oriented side of things in a future episode, but for right now, I'm going to tell you that you have to understand what kind of a story you're trying to tell right out of the gate. The 5th edition Dungeon Master's Guide offers a few different ideas for various styles of games you can run, along with many world-shaking events which you can set your story against. For example, the book gives an example on page 29 that the land which the party is currently adventuring in is experiencing a violent revolution or rebellion. I think that's a good example that we could play around with and really bend in a way that might be creative and fun for the players at your table. In another example, you can keep the ruling powers as evil or dictatorial and make the rebels appear as selfless and altruistic, but over time, slowly drip-feed the party hints that something isn't necessarily right about the methods the rebels are using or their goals. This flips the situation on its head and makes the party play a game of helping lesser evils. Going back to Star Wars a moment, one of my favorite things to come out of Disney's corporate assimilation of a galaxy far, far away has been the way the Rebel Alliance is depicted in the new media. Rogue One, a Star Wars story, is seen through the eyes of Jyn Erso, somebody who isn't necessarily a fan of either the Galactic Empire or the Rebel Alliance. And that's interesting, because through her eyes, we see much more of that gray area between how the Rebels and the Empire interact with each other. The Rebels in Rogue One rely much more on ambush tactics, and oftentimes civilians get caught and killed in the crossfire as the Rebels set off what are basically car bombs. It really makes Jyn question the righteousness of the Rebel allies she has at her side, especially after her father is killed during a Rebel bombing run later in the film. Now, of course, this being a Star Wars film, Jyn eventually does come around to the side of the Rebel Alliance, and even lays down her life to make sure that the Death Star plans get to the Rebel leaders, but it still creates that interesting crossplay between maniacal evil and understandable brutality. This is the same spirit that maybe you could try and capture in your game. Maybe the rebel leaders are alone in their evil intentions. Think like Maximilien Robespierre, a charming and brilliant figure in the late 18th century in Paris, who was actually one of the biggest villains of the French Revolution despite being on the right side, quote-unquote. He harbored insane ideals that saw the deaths of hundreds of innocent Parisians, but was able to continually justify the bloodshed he caused by virtue of his genuine belief that he would be creating a better society for France. In this sort of a scenario, the party grows closer and closer to rebel leadership, but at the same time, notice more and more how truly wicked the rebel boss is, and that they don't necessarily intend to replace the old guard with a friendlier alternative. Given this kind of crossplay opens the players up to debate about which side they would aid to ensure the best outcome for the kingdom in the end, or even to remove the corrupt leader and take over the rebellion in their stead. Maybe they even join the Empire, just to stop evil rebel leader. Maybe the rebel leaders are alone in their evil intentions. Think like Maximilien Robespierre, a charming and brilliant figure in the late 18th century in Paris, who was actually one of the biggest villains of the French Revolution despite being on the right side, quote-unquote. He harbored insane ideals that saw the deaths of hundreds of innocent Parisians, but was able to continually justify the bloodshed he caused by virtue of his genuine belief that he would be creating a better society for France. In this sort of a scenario, the party grows closer and closer to rebel leadership, but at the same time, notice more and more how truly wicked the rebel boss is, and that they don't necessarily intend to replace the old guard with a friendlier alternative. Given this kind of crossplay opens the players up to debate about which side they would aid to ensure the best outcome for the kingdom in the end, or even to remove the corrupt leader and take over the rebellion in their stead. Maybe they even join the Empire, just to stop your evil ruler. Evil rebel leader? I'll cut that. For example, one of the most basic spells in the game, don't laugh, is called Prestidigitation. It's a cantrip, which means that unlike other spells, it can be cast an unlimited number of times before the party rests again. It is described as follows. This spell is a minor magical trick that novice spellcasters use for practice. You create one of the following magical effects within range. You create an instantaneous, harmless sensory effect, such as a shower of sparks, a puff of wind, faint musical notes, or an odd color. You instantaneously light or snuff out a candle, a torch, or a small campfire. You instantaneously clean or soil an object no larger than 1 cubic foot. You chill, warm, or flavor up to 1 cubic foot of non-living material for 1 hour. You make a color, a spark, or a symbol appear on an object or surface for 1 hour. You create a non-magical trinket or an illusory image that can fit in your hand and that lasts until the end of your next turn. If you cast this spell multiple times, you can have up to 3 of its non-instantaneous effects active at a time, and you can dismiss such an effect as an action. Wow. And you can do this, in theory, an unlimited number of times. There's an insane number of ways that you can use just that basic cantrip to maximum effect. Say the party is trying to sneak across the Great Hall of some building they're in. They need to get across a heavily patrolled area that's swarming with guards. With Prestidigitation, the spellcaster can distract the guards in a number of ways. For example, they can, in rapid succession, snuff out every torch that lights the hall, making sneaking across much easier. They can distract the guards by causing sparks to rain down overhead, causing a flurry of confusion the party can take advantage of. They can distract them with sounds of out-of-place music sounding at one of the other halls. You get what I'm saying. The variety is amazing, and every player will think differently about how they can approach a general situation. In this way, D&D becomes a game of training your critical thinking skills, encouraging experimentation with various ideas as a player. DMs get a lot of creative leeway as well. At any given point, the DM needs to be at least 2 steps ahead of the party to make sure that they're ready for any unexpected action that the players take. Having a break between sessions, in my case, once every 2 weeks, is a blessing because it gives me ample time to put together interesting scenarios and directions I can whisk my friends in for the next chapter of my game. My last game ended with several of my players initiating actions they wished to take effect before my next game. One of my friends, who's playing a Kenku artificer named Fizz, reached out into the criminal underworld so that he could locate his estranged family for help in progressing the main plot. My other friend is Cannon, a half-demon cyborg warrior princess, and she ended my last session by consigning herself with a mysterious organization in exchange for passage back to her home country, with the condition that she must now help them take down her brother, a budding dictator. Finally, the Goliath Stonemancer, Vol, has commissioned a new weapon from a local tinkerer to make him even more effective in combat. I don't know if any of my friends are going to wind up listening to this, so I'm not even going to mention the number of possibilities I've come up with where these threads might go, but I invite you to think of the number of places where I could take them. It's staggering. In short, D&D is much more than a simple game of make-believe. It's an engine for generating and practicing critical thinking skills, for exploring the tropes that make an interesting story work, and for practicing your own writing skills. It lets you commit to my absolute favorite part of D&D, which is stepping out of yourself and throwing yourself into a fantastic and wonderful creation of your own design. Be it a story you've made, a character you've written, Dungeons & Dragons is truly the cream of the crop.
Oof. You know, I had fun doing that. That was an interesting experience, and I certainly hope you enjoyed listening to me ramble like a madman as much as I did committing my insanity and nerd babble to a script. I only hope that you'll join me for the next episode of Beginner's Basics here in a week. Now that I have you more in the appropriate mindset with this episode, we'll be going over the basics of what the game actually entails, such as character creation, dice, rolling, and initiative. I'm Evan Kaufman. I have been your Dungeon Master. These have been your Beginner's Basics to Dungeons & Dragons, and you are welcome.